we have discussed it. Let's take the next step then and see what's out there, because here we have a method we're presenting and offering to help simplify information. DHS may be able to use this, and perhaps we can get a grant from them. You know, I was thinking about that. I don't know if it's possible, but they need help with their websites. And if we can offer that to them, and as a study, that might be something to look into. So this presentation, not so plain writing, federal compliance with the 2010 Plain Writing Act. The paper itself, though, is going to focus on DHS agencies, because there are about 50 agencies that are listed on the Plain Language website. But we in health services want to focus on our area. So this is pretty much the second paper. Not totally written yet, but I'm not presenting paper. I'm just presenting the elements of our project. Just to reiterate that, for me, it really started way back when I first started at CHU and I read this report. It blew me away. We knew this from my own experiences in healthcare, but it was great to know that. So then, in fact, I was a resident at the time when this came out. And the mandate of this task force, I'm dating myself, the mandate was to produce information that people can understand, that they can use as appropriate to their culture, that meets their needs. You know, then, simply said. And we spoke about plain language, which is a movement that's really probably more than a century old, but took traction in the 60s and really gained traction in the mid-90s to the point where the law was passed. And plain language being a communication that has language structure and design that's clear enough so people can read it, understand it, and use it. And we also spoke about the question, what is plain language anyway? I mean, why the word plain? And actually, Ron brought that up a couple of months ago. We were talking about that. And it gave me pause, because is that the best word? Well, it's the word that's being used. It's the word that's accepted, and so we use it.
But it's interesting, if that's plain language, what is the language we use on a day-to-day basis, right? Because plain language has to be something different than what we usually do.
And in fact, one of the things I thought about, who's it plain for? If you grow up in certain communities, say in Brooklyn or the Bronx, we speak a certain way. And for us, it's plain.
It's Queens.
Right, it's understandable, and I can use it. But this definition of plain language really does mirror the definition of health literacy, and I found that interesting because I've done a lot of work with health literacy, and when I read this, I said, wait a minute, this reminds me of, oh yeah. And so I looked back on that definition, which is pretty generic. We actually worked on our own definition of health literacy, and well, that's another story in another paper, because, but again, this is operational. This is pretty much what's being used in government, used by all the agencies, and it's a degree to which individuals have the capacity. And that's where I have trouble with the capacity issue. So if you don't have the capacity, you can't eventually have health literacy. I think there's something more to that. But we need to obtain, process, and understand basic health information and services to make decisions about our health. And that's the Department of Health and Human Services, that's IOM, I believe, coined that. Something very similar. But this is pretty much a working definition. What it comes down to is that plain writing is a method. And in the context of health services, plain writing is a strategy for translating complex health information to plain language with the goal of improving health literacy. I like the word translation. So we're actually translating from English to English, in one case, if you think about it. And I find that fascinating. So whenever you see the eye, we got to keep an eye on this definition. And if you see the eye, you see more presentations, because it's something we got to really pay attention to. So the Plain Writing Act, briefly, just requires agencies, federal agencies, to write clear government communication. Now, I'm not sure what that means. Clear government communication.
Right, because right, so, government communication may be different than non-government communication.
Right, right. Clear non-government. That the public can use and understand. And that's key, that the public, not just agency people, but that anyone who accesses agency websites can actually use, can actually read, understand, and use. Obama basically, in a memorandum on transparency and open government in January 2009, he emphasized a system of transparency, public participation, and collaboration. So transparency meaning open up the floodgates, this is the deal, this is what's going on. The public participation part, I don't see it happening. And the more I dig into these sites, the more I'm convinced that they haven't really attained that yet. And then the collaborative effort, I'm not clear on that. At some point, the public...
Collaboration is not among government agencies.
Between agencies.
Oh, it is. Okay. That's what I was saying.
Not only between agencies, but also with non-agency groups outside. I'll show you something later that deals with corporate plain language issues, legal plain language issues. The law is the worst in terms of language use. They have their own language. Even if you translate it, it's hard to read. Fascinating. So what is known, that should be what an end. What is known about compliance with the Plain Writing Act? In any research, you want to know what is there, what's known, and then what is not known. And then you ask a research question, you just follow it down. So what do we know? Well, I did a search on PubMed, Plain Writing Act of 2010, and these 10 other keywords. Federal compliance, agency compliance, agency initiatives, compliance, observance, monitoring, oversight, surveillance, training. Compliance is key for this law. Every agency has to, on an annual basis, submit a report. They have a template for them, and they have to fill out and submit this report. So that's huge. Having an act without oversight makes no sense. And another important part of it is training. Every agency must train their employees in the use of plain language principles to create easy-to-read, easy-to-understand language that basically deals with the agency's focus. And this is what I found, that there was only one paper that came up. And the arrows mean that it's the same paper. So when I put in initiatives, it's only one paper popped up in PubMed. And it focuses on health literacy, not on compliance. And it mentions the act. I'll call it the act. And so that's why it popped up on PubMed. I also went to Google Scholar and did the exact same thing. And two papers popped up. The one from PubMed and one about corporate plain language. Why didn't that pop up in PubMed? Anyone? It's from Australia.
Was it about health?
Yeah, they don't have to report it to NIH. Unless they're funded by NIH. But this is a paper that was written from a group in Australia. So it popped up in Google Scholar. So only two papers came up when I put all these keywords together. So they were taken a look at, since there are only two. The first one, which is from PubMed, new federal policy initiatives to boost health literacy can help the nation move beyond the cycle of costly, priceless care. And basically they're focusing on health literacy. But the interesting thing is that in 2010, the Affordable Care Act of 2010, DHS, National Action Plan to Improve Health Literacy, and the Plain Writing Act came up in the same year. So it's really gaining momentum at that point, and now that's 6 years since. The other one, which I found interesting, is called Considering Plain Language Issues and Initiatives. And they looked at plain language initiatives in Canada, the United States, and Australia. And what they concluded was The paper concludes with suggestions for further research in the corporate sector. So they're not even dealing with the medical sector, the health services sector, where issues such as plain language standards are contestable. And yesterday, we were actually, in our methods, proposing a standard for approaching the creation of plain language. And compliance with plain language guidelines is under researched. So right there, we're onto something. There's very little information available. If I don't know, I said there's no information available in terms of scholarly publications.
Can you go back one?
Sure.
So this one looks like it's a sort of commentary, because these are all federal people, and so it looks like they're just talking about that these are important initiatives or acts that have been passed and that people should be aware of them. But probably that's about it.
And then they don't address the issue of compliance, per se.
Yeah. I would doubt it.
Yeah. Well, I went through most of it, and I didn't see, didn't see much of that. It's available. You can get the PDF for that if you just go to PubMed. And this one that you have to pay for, I think they want $35. So I just dealt with the abstract. I was just fascinating. I didn't have $35 on me to give them. And, but essentially, I think that what I highlighted about under research, we're on something. We're on to something. And after 6 years, nobody's really looked at compliance of this law in say, just DHS, then it's worth reporting and thinking about submitting it to Health Affairs. We talked about that. I think that would be a good journal to send this to. It's a policy issue. Mm-hmm. So we talked about plain language principle categories, and there are pretty much, you can put them into four. One is, and this is basically comes from the plain language organizations, and they feel that these areas are most important. Do you find, like, there are different organizations, an international plain language, there are local ones, there are committees here in the United States, but overall, targeting the information audience, the audience information need, which makes sense. You want to know who are you writing for, what do they need in terms of written information, using appropriate and familiar formats, things they recognize and things that they find useful in terms of interacting. Visual display is very important. And word choice, sentence structure. As far as visual display, the importance of that is because a lot of this is online. And how you hook up websites and web pages is just an art and a big business in and of itself. Word choice, sentence structure is grammar related. And we talked about that. That's where we hit on yesterday, the grammar aspect. And summative evaluation at the end of the day, evaluating the results. And we also found that there was not much being done in terms of evaluation. So this is from the plainlanguage.gov website. It showed pretty much on the top of this page, it says the act was signed in 2010. But some federal agencies have been promoting the use of plain language for years. If you don't see your agency listed, contact us. Now, if this was a mandate 6 years ago, why haven't they put it out? So right there, they're not compliant. They're not being transparent. And what I did is I cut and pasted just DHS, so CDC, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and FDA. These are the three we will be looking at deeply, carefully, in different levels, not only their compliance reports, because they have to post their compliance reports, and we'll go through those, but also what they're showing online for people, for example, what's CDC showing about prevention of disease and things like that. So we're going to look at all of that and see whether or not they're in compliance with the law. And they have contact information. One thing that's notable is that each agency has a plain language person. In the plain language community, they call them plainers. And this is one of their tags. So each agency has a plainer that's in charge. This one, Office of Communication, Advisor on Plain Language Coordinator, whatever they're called, they're responsible for that. And I found that pretty cool. We spoke yesterday. We looked at the FDA website briefly as an example of non-compliance. And interestingly, the FDA website posted Federal Aviation Administration information and DHS guidelines, the dietary guideline information, but nothing about what they do. So that I found that a sense. A subliminal non-compliance. So they listed 14 plain language principles that can put into the four categories. And seven of them were audience information need related, six were visual display related, four grammar related, and zero evaluation. Keep an eye on that. Okay? And they were busted up into usage tips and plain language on the web. So what's going on with that? If with compliance, you must measure. And why aren't they measuring? Well, I looked a little further, and this is the FDA, their compliance report for 2015, number three, measurement. How do you measure whether you've covered documents, whether your covered documents use plain writing? We have no metrics in place to directly measure whether our covered documents use plain writing. Hello? If you don't measure, then you can't be compliant, can you? I mean, even if you did it, one thing I learned early in research was show me. But this and this and this and that, hey, I was young, right? Ready to go. And it was Rick who said, yeah, that's a great idea, Jose. Prove it. Show me. Come on, Rick, you know. You know this is true. Show me. And this chief's right. He was right. And I learned that the hard way. So this was very powerful. They don't have a system of measuring whether or not thousands of documents, probably. Must be thousands in FDA. And that's...
They don't want to measure them.
Tell me about it. I did further research into that in terms of the drug that was the most commonly prescribed and the most commonly used over-the-counter drugs and how they read and the difficulty of reading. Bad. Even like ibuprofen, which is so commonly used, very difficult to read their information. Keep an eye on that. So what we did in our paper that we presented yesterday was we proposed a series of evaluative steps that are formative as opposed to summative that we should be evaluating as we go. And this is something that may be useful, for example, to DHS and other agencies. So what I want to do is just give you an example. I thought to myself, okay, I could either do the DHS websites now, but let me check the Department of Education, because if anybody will be compliant, it would be Department of Education, no? And I really thought that. I really
know now.
So when I... This is what they post on their website, Plain Writing Compliance, U.S. Department of Education. Plain Writing Initiative. And this is what you see, the first thing that you read. And what happens with this is I did a readability evaluation and estimates, and this is how they read. And I was surprised that the DED would not have some plain language. 13th grade, 1 at 6th grade level, 15, 17, 13. And that's those bracketed numbers mean flesh... Kincaid grade level and flesh reading E score. Remember that the grade levels are not exacting and that they actually represent a range of grades.
So it's subliminal that it's the Department of Higher Education.
Oh, college? See what happens with that. And the flesh reading E is 0 to 100, with 100 being the easiest possible to read. So you can see that we have a 0 here. 17th grade level, and it's rated as 0. And that's powerful for the Department of Education. Just graphically, this is what it looks like. What I wanted to show you with this was where we should be and where that passage is. Standard is between 7th and 9th grade, so I drew the line at about 9th grade, the upper limit. And for people with limited literacy, just about everybody agrees we should be writing at 6th grade or less. So E.T. missed the boat, and that does look like a little boat there, doesn't it? It's just not good for standard, not good for people's limited literacy. And one of the things that we concluded in our paper yesterday is that by using grammatic parsing and really simplifying things to six or less is pretty much universal precaution. Because if we get it down, everything down to the point where anyone can read it, then it's sort of like a universal precaution in terms of health literacy improvement. So then I looked at Department of Education, their overview and mission statement. Right? And this is their mission statement. And this is how it looks. Again, you got the boat. And I started wondering when I started looking at this, certain shapes of readability graphs, maybe there's something to that. But one of the things you will notice is that there's variation in readability. We published on that years, remember? And that it goes, but somebody starts at 20th, they may not understand it and put it away. Let me get out of this website. Or if they start at, say, 6th grade level, and all of a sudden it increases in difficulty, again, frustrating. So if there's a consistency, if I could keep it just under this line, and even if it's variation, that's universally cautious. You know, and so this is very interesting for me to see Education Department, and this is their mission statement. These are mothers and dads going online. Many of them don't have good educational skills. And then I looked at the Early Learning Initiative on Department of Education. And this is a webinar that they have online. And this is what they posted. It's crowded. I mean, you look at it, it's just very crowded. So from a visual display point of view, the cognitive access cost is high. Just looking at it, man, it's like, wow, I don't want to read this. You know, cognitive access, your perception of how much energy and how much effort is it going to take for me to read and understand this. And so this one, with all of this writing, comes down to three sentences. And that's what it looks like. And again, I mean, 15 to 26 to 22. And this is an early childhood initiative. So we have young mothers accessing this. So what we want to do is actually take a very, very careful look at compliance with DHS. And it's going to be more of a policy issue than anything else. We're not saying we're going to spank it. What I would like to see us say is, this is the issue, this is the challenge, and we have some solutions. And we'd like to share those with you, you know, particularly what we presented yesterday. And it's not about, you know, being George of the Jungle, it's just about what can we do to change this. And if they're having problems at DHS, one of the things that I said yesterday, you know what, nobody else is doing this. We're in a great position in this division to change how we communicate in healthcare, and taking that can be translated to other fields, law, corporate, business. I mean, really, there's a lot of potential here. So for a discussion, I'll just quote you Joseph Pulitzer again, put it before them briefly, so they can read it clearly, so they will appreciate it, picturesquely, so they will remember it, and above all, accurately, so they'll be guided by its light. And in conclusion, 6 years since the Plain Writing Act became law, they ain't doing what they're supposed to be doing.
But there's a person in charge of this. Yeah.
That's plain language, by the way. Alrighty, that's what I wanted to share with you, that this is a work in progress. There's a lot of, and for me, the most important part was the beginning, where all those zeros, nobody's really looking at this, and it's hugely important. We pass laws, or the presidential efforts to change laws, and nothing is done about it. That was a 30-minute presentation. I'm going to start it over for Martin. It's 12:30. Welcome on. Yeah, come on.
So what do you think about contacting the contacts that you have from the agencies and just kind of The people that were listed earlier on the slide, you had four different people from the government.
You mean like these folks? The folks who were listed?
Yeah. And just, you know, like having a semi-structured interview with...
That's good.
Try to get the reaction.
These people?
Yeah.
That's a good idea. That's a good thought, Ron. How would you
find out, you know, what they're doing, and then, you know, hit them with this information. Yeah. Well, what about this?
They all have websites with information and the compliance reports, and they have, and so they probably referred me to the compliance report.
Try to see what they think they're doing internally to address this, if anything, and do they realize that these documents are not readable?
That's a great idea. Maybe just shoot out an email to them.
Well, I don't know.
You give them a call,
you mean? Yeah, I think you better do that.
Make it personal, upfront and personal. That's a good idea. And you know, interestingly, they all have people on staff who are ostensibly trained plain language writers. But as we saw yesterday, that many of the products of plain language writing are difficult to read. Mm-hmm. Because if you start using principles, say, well, what is a principle? It's an idea. It's more of an idea. It's a guide, but it's subjective. And to say that evaluation can be done by checklists, because a federal website suggests checklists, and or field testing, very subjective. And so I have a checklist, and as I said yesterday, I could just say, yeah, I did this and I did this. But how can we be sure? This one really took me for a loop when the Federal Drug Administration said they have no metrics to measure whether or not their CUB documents are in plain language. And yet, so they're saying that they have people on staff that do this, but they're not measuring what they're doing. But I wonder, what questions would you ask, Ron, if we come communicate with these folks? But if we're writing a paper, should we tell them?
Well, like, another thing is whether you can even collaborate with them in writing a paper. It would probably have more impact if you found someone else to collaborate with.
And what's
interview?
Yeah.
You know, they would learn from it, too. More directly.
You know, and make it such that we're offering them something. Back to that question, is something like this fundable? Is it worthy the effort to prepare an application where we're saying, it could be a training plus research. One of the things that they're expected to do is ask the public whether or not it's understandable, their information. How they're asking that on the FDA website, the same one, this one, I think it's letter C. How are you going to the public to ensure that they feel it's in plain language? And it's very vague. And what are your challenges? Budget.
Yes, I see that as... There may be contracts that they would have for getting some of that work done. For a grant, I'd have to think it through because I'm not sure what the hypothesis is. And if we had a hypothesis, how compelling that would be for some of the different agencies.
You're going to do an intervention, right? Then you redesign it and see how well people understand it.
But, yeah.
A few other things like that. You know, hypothesize that this can improve people's ability to understand what's up on the website and access it.
Right.
So guess what agency would be the question, because the NIH would only be interested if it has health implications, and you'd have to first of all show that anything on a federal website has any implications for health before you could argue that it needs to be better. Right? Yeah.
Well, on one hand, yes. On the other hand, if it's bad, so maybe we can't even entertain its implications on health until it's readable. So maybe starting with an institute or a division within an institute, but it goes in, you know, to make that proposal. I can talk to some different people.
Well, perhaps we could start right here in our own backyard and set up a workshop training sessions on the use of parsing and plain language principles. you know, before we go out there and start saying, hey, we know what we're doing?
So,
well, one thing that might be interesting is to understand, I mean, the Affordable Care Act, you know, they have an exchange, they have a website and so on. People go look at this stuff, and I think most people are totally confused, and they just kind of wait with their eyes closed, right? I mean,
that's true.
And those are the people who have,
and those are the physicians.
Yeah. So in terms of a policy that people are interested in understanding the accessibility of that information would be quite relevant to policy.
You know, that's a great point, because it's one thing to put the information up. It's another point to see whether or not they know how to access it. I mean, I was driving in, I was asking myself that question. Who goes on the plainlanguage.gov website anyway? Has anybody here gone on, other than we have, other than the four authors, has anybody gone on that website? And why did I get on that website and then share it with my co-authors? Because I kept digging and digging and digging and digging and then plain language, and wait a minute, it's a law, so let me see. Federal government, plain language, bang, came up. And that was a godsend, because it helped us put this whole idea of parsing in context.
Yeah. So one other perspective or consideration for this, because we were talking earlier around making... And most grants and most federal grants, almost all of our grants, have a dissemination section where it's important to get it out to the community. And we were talking earlier, Arlene and I, with some others, around how to make sure material is not just put in the peer review domain, but to get it out into communities. And so we have a communications sort of working group as part of the CTSI, but even there, it's there's a writer from the LA Times, former writer from the LA Times, who can help. But you know, I don't think we've actually taken a step back to look to say, what is it? You know, if we want to get it out to community, other than try to tell people to write it more simply. You know, have we really given people an understanding of some of the structure that go, you know, and a more formal approach? Here we are at a university.
Yeah.
Is there a more academic approach to turning one's information into materials that are readily understandable by a broad community? And I don't think we've really thought about a more formal academic approach to that.
Well, the NIH has this PubMed Central, right? Supposedly to get everything out there for the population. I don't have to tell you. No one reads that, right?
No. No.
I mean, the only people who could comprehend the stuff that they're putting up are the ones who have access to the journals anyways, I think.
Yeah. So we do the work, but it doesn't get out there. It's not translated to the community.
It's
you know, in the last few months, doing groups with, especially the Teresa Lindsay Center with the elderly there, the African American elderly there, and at HAP, it's amazing how, especially in the elderly center, how they're saying that they just don't get the information. They just don't. It's not useful for them. It just isn't, and I wasn't surprised that they didn't use the internet often. I was not surprised. My mother's one of the oldest in that group, and I said, "Ma, have you thought about, you know, with the tablet, get online?" She goes, but my sister-in-law sat, bought her a tablet, sat with her, and got her a Facebook account, and she's on Facebook now. So, how do we get the older population, the elderly population, to buy into the internet if they're not into it? Then, so is this doing them any justice? And the other question I have is, are the paper handouts, say, from any given agency based on what's posted? Are they just printing it out and handing it out? So in either case, we have this barrier now to understanding health and health issues and how to care for ourselves.
Yeah. But I'd say particularly for a lot of elderly or first time getting, for anybody newly getting on the internet, there's this perception that, oh, this is something new, and that there's access to information, and a lot of people sort of think all that information is real.
Yeah.
Mm. And that can be very dangerous. And so there's both access, but it's also understanding its limitations and how to effectively use the internet to do what you want to do and not.
Yeah. And how about people who can't read at all? One of the experiences I had recently with a group of elderly was that they had a lot of visual impairment because of diabetes and not a physical disability, impressive. But they're often excluded from research because they have visual impairment. And one of the participants, when I gave her the CAP survey, actually the diabetes left survey, and I could see her cocking her head, so I knew that she had visual field loss. And yet she was, and asking them, was this easy to read? Because we basically using everything that we've talked about for surveys, making them very simple with Sansaic versification, more than one line. And they like that. They've been choosing the CAPS E over the other CAPS. But the animation, because I also showing them the animated video that we developed some years back at Drew called What is Diabetes? Hands down, they felt, even the people who could read, even the people who had no visual impairment, hands down felt, this is a great way to teach about health. And I'm very excited about that, because that's going to be the grant that's what I'm developing now.
Well, for a lot of people, the thing that helps them if they don't read is audio books and things. Now, none of this is audio, is it? I mean, there isn't an audio. I could imagine. You play the audio, and Robert De Niro says, "If you don't lose weight, you're going to die." Or whatever.
There's a lot of journals that are doing that now.
They are.
You get the interview with the authors.
Right.
They do a good job making things. Mm-hmm.
Well, and one of the problems with websites is that they often do add bells and whistles. Then you have to click on something, and you have trouble opening the thing. And I have to go to my kids to get help sometimes with some of these things. But I can just remember, I don't think I'm the least capacitated person, but even when email was kind of a growing thing, I thought I could kind of ignore it. And then I got a message from Ron Hayes that said, "You need to get your email shit together."
So what I would like to do is, this is actually come back and in the future, Ron, and present the results of our work on DHS. But you want to...
The idea of calling these people, I'm thinking before of some questions to ask each one to see. And I also think that measuring is...
A structured interview.
Yes. Yes. Like three questions to ask each.
I think that if I would... Will you say, Ron, that I should call, say that I'm doing a project?
Oh, yeah.
And I'm interested in
you. You wouldn't be able to see her, but we'd just let him...
Would that turn him off, you think?
You give it back to Mama.
No. I think they'd be really interested.
Is that what I would do?
I'm getting that for availability, but we'd have a higher priority than a lot of other people in the phone.
I would think I would have a list of questions that ask the same questions.
Yeah, semi-structured.
Yeah, a script of sorts. And see what the responses are.
Yeah.
And you don't hit them right away with what you found here, but I think at some point you say, okay, I looked at this.
Actually share with them what we found so far.
And kind of towards the end of the interview, I found this, and how it was developed, and were you aware of this, and kind of dig into whether they really have a place to change.
There seems to be a vacuum on training let me show you this, Martin. I think that we'd be...
You don't want to just start out and say, "We looked at your website, it sucks. Can we ask you some questions? Are you in charge? Can we ask you some questions?"
This is their website. And I just cut and pasted the DHS part. There's about 50 agencies altogether. that are listed. And they have, what Ron was getting at here, I brought up the suggestion of communicating with these people. And they're all planers, you know, they're all people who are supposedly, that's the going with.
From Nebraska.
Experts, yeah. Experts on plain language. And they're the people who would be responsible for ensuring compliance with the act. And so you say, don't call them directly, rather than email them. They're probably swamped with emails.
Well, I thought you meant ask them questions over email. I guess you could try to contact them that way.
We'll go to Washington.
You don't want to have an email with questions. Though. You want to be able to talk to them.
Yeah.
Or as an introduction, at least. I'm going to say I will.
So your point about contract is actually...
So I think there are some grants we can think of.
First, let's get this published and get it done. And
for grants, but I think, you know, but for actually... So the grants would be... As Ron said, you know, looking at, depending on what the topic is, if you want to work, say you have some people from the American Diabetes, we have a bunch of patients with diabetes who like to go to our website, and we do an assessment before and then after and look at what changes and does it influence how they... interact with the healthcare community or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, and so there could, you know, so in that study, there would be a redesign of a language and maybe some of the physical characteristics of the website.
So the deliverable would be something they can use.
So it would be both so if in fact we demonstrate it was effective, then they'd keep, right? If we redesigned it and everybody hated it, then they wouldn't keep.
Mm.
But for, in general, redesigning and trying, so for trying to become compliant with the act, that I think would be, they might then say, we'll contract out to somebody. And then maybe, and so that would be then that would just be a deliverable. The deliverable would be modifying the language on whatever different materials to come in compliance with the act.
And evaluate it and have an evaluation.
Well, there would be metrics. So
for them to use.
So there are metrics that could be used.
Yeah, I would think that would be part of it. Not only helping them modify the language, but also evaluating it in the field, for example.
Yeah, but making sure it meets certain linguistic thresholds, and then... You know, maybe we can, and also working with maybe community partners, right? So there, you know, there's supposed to be collaboration with community. There's supposed to be public participation or something. And so, making sure that process held to those principles from the act.
Yeah, you know what's interesting also to look at would be it's a pain to put things like on the ARC website, and whenever you try to do it because of ADA compliance. So they have some pretty strict rules there, but you wonder about these rules are strict. They could work towards, you're worried about that, but you're really not worried about people understanding, and that could be something in the future that you need to do.
Well, do we know what their intended audience is generally? Because if these are, you know, at the 15th grade level, I'm wondering if that really is by chance, or if whoever was building these sites really... So, who their intended audience was, or their readership, I'm sure they have some level of analytics on the back end to see if this was really something they did by chance, or if they really were intending their readership to be the 15th grade and above.
I don't know what I find so far from what I've investigated, is that they don't have a good evaluative process. And I think that's at least for these sites that I've looked at. And I'm not sure if I'm answering your question, but that's why I said I think that if you offer, say, you came to me, can you help me simplify this consent form, this survey, which we can do, this health communication, which we can do. We have methods that we're using, we're testing, that are working in the field now. Once we publish all of this, gives us more credence. for submitting for contracts. But you know, it's not clear to me why after so many years of the IOM's report, the you know, just every major department saying the same thing, why they're not doing it. What did, and
that would be another question you could ask when you talk to them. Yeah. I doubt they're going to say that they targeted for 15th grade level.
Right.
But they may just say, well, you know, we don't really have a specific grade level. Yeah. They may not have really that much specific.
Yeah. Also, language translation.
Yeah.
How about translating into other languages and what's happening with that?
Yeah.
Here, we'll, I'm going to go, I don't, you know what? Let's go on the Spanish website, see what they.
So I thought, I'll take a look through, I don't know where it came. That they're supposed to be at ninth grade or below with a preference of being below sixth grade. Mm-hmm. But I think the target, you know, but ninth grade is sort of the upper end. That's my recollection.
Yeah, that's upper standard, which is the average educational level, regardless of whether or not you went to high school and graduated high school, because it's pretty much been shown that after several years, your reading skills diminish. So you may have a high school diploma, be reading at ninth, eighth grade, and that's considered standard.
Well, I think the average person graduating high school is at the ninth grade reading.
Yep. Do you know what the California exit exam requires in terms of reading skills? Seventh grade. This is
for which?
Seventh grade. The if you can read and reading show reading comprehension at the seventh grade level, you get your diploma. So, it really did come down over the years, Keith. From it was definitely ninth, was I would say ninth, which is early high school. But over the last several years, people are saying, like AMA has stepped up in their policy, is that anything in medicine, in clinical medicine, really should be a sixth grade or lower.
Right.
You know, so it's who knows, in 10 years it'll be third grade. In fact, no more reading. Everybody watch cartoons and learn. Alrighty. Thank you very much for coming.
Speaking of cartoons, I was watching South Park the other day, and they were talking about lowering the bar.
Lowering the bar.
And so this Cameron, guy who does like Avatar and everything, he was trying to find the bar. He had to go deep into the sea, way down to the bottom, to find the bar. And then he was bringing it back up because the bar had been lowered so much.
That's a crazy animation. But that hopefully we can raise the bar from in this division and take the lead. We can. In health communication, health literacy, we have so many pieces in place here that we really can take a lead nationally.
We do a lot of work with surveys.
Have you looked at the materials available here in LA County?
Which materials?
Have you looked at the materials here in Los Angeles County?
Not yet, no. That's a great idea.
You know, as you think about developing
that's a great idea.
This may be a good place to start.
That's a great idea. You mean like DHS materials?
DHS, yeah.
DHS here. Yeah.
You know, one of the things we have enough in the survey area, we have been looking at what some of the local, like Uncle Med is using for CAPS. One of the beauties of CAPS is that you can just, you have your core, but you can shape it to whatever you want it to be for your health delivery system. So, you know, evaluating one doesn't mean you evaluate another, but that's a great idea. I like that.
That could be a pilot project with CTSI, potentially. I'm sure
how
would be really, again, this is something that If he sees that this is going to improve what they do, that's what he's interested in more than anything else.
Yeah. You know, they just rolled out a patient portal.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, so that'd be a good place to start.
Yeah, that would be really good.
Yeah. Alrighty.
I have a quick question. So my understanding that there are no metrics for mental health here now. Any metrics for?
Yeah.
Oh.
There are some metrics. I don't know why the FDA people said they said they don't have any metrics. I don't. Maybe they feel they don't have metrics to measure. I don't know why they said that. You know, it seems like maybe there weren't specific metrics that came out with that. The law, but there are, I can't say what they're... What, so there are... Yeah, I guess it's determining, you know, it, you know, what grade level we want and how you want to assess it. So there's, you know, there are different strategies one can use to assess the readability. And...
The reason why I'm asking you, plain language is different from readability, right? How plain you are at one level. So if you have the, if there are no metrics, then maybe the opportunity is to establish that metrics, that specific metric
That really surprised me that in their compliance report they admitted they were being transparent. They said we don't have the metrics in place. And although I was surprised by it, I stepped back a second, it gave me pause. How did that happen? Here, you know, you have to be compliant. And you know what? It was pretty well spelled out in this compliance template. So how, after 6 years, did you not put something in place to measure what you're doing and outcomes and evaluation? So these are big agencies, and that's probably part of the problem, that interagency communication and logistics. And I've never worked for the government per se, but we know that can be a quagmire, you know, even at the state level or the county level. And you guys know better than I. You know, the only time I worked for the government was when I was a resident at the VA, and that was a quagmire. Yeah, it's so different. But yeah, the good point. It's why? Why not? If you do research, when you submit a proposal, have you submit it without stating how you're going to measure?
And how you're going to measure.
Right?
So they have a definition. Kind
of. Or a paper, yeah. All righty, thanks, folks.
Right, thanks.
I'll see you in October.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.